Welcome back to our series that we're calling Fear Not. We're talking about how to manage our fears through faith. Today I want to talk with you about how storms can make us stronger. We all face violent storms in our lives sometimes. Difficult circumstances, troubling situations, unexpected setbacks can frighten us. Even when things are going well, it's easy to become fearful about the next storm down the line. It's easy to anticipate what's going to happen next, and it won't be good. But we should not allow those fears to control us, because God holds a hedge of protection around every single one of us. A hedge of protection is like a spiritual wall that surrounds you, shielding you and defending you from danger and adversity. In the scripture, there was a man named Job who was blessed by God. He had many children, a lot of cattle, and great wealth. He was by far the most prosperous man in that region. I guess you could say he wore the big hat around town. Well, one day, Satan comes to God, and he asks permission to put Job to the test. God points out that Job is a faithful man. He's always obeyed, honored, and respected God. He's always tried to do what is right. But Satan replied, "Have you not surrounded him and his family and all that he has with your hedge of protection?" Satan's accusation was simple. Job was faithful because God had protected him and prospered him. Take away that protection, remove that prosperity, and things would definitely be different. To prove Satan wrong, God removed that hedge of protection from around Job, and pretty soon the storms came one after another. All his children died, his livestock were wiped out, he lost all his wealth, and he was covered from head to toe with painful blisters. Job was miserable. There are times when God will remove that hedge of protection from around us, and that's when storms can enter into our lives. Coworkers start gossiping about us, or classmates start spreading rumors, and it gets all around. People are talking about us. Or you go in for that routine health exam, the medical exam, and it turns out to reveal something serious, a serious condition. Or a major investor pulls out at the last moment, or your best client takes his business elsewhere. A lot of things can happen. Or your spouse is unfaithful. It's a storm. There's lots of possible storms. In the gospel reading tonight, chapter 4 of Mark, Jesus has just finished teaching the crowds all day. And in the evening, he decides to cross to the other side of the Sea of Galilee with his disciples. It would be his first trip onto foreign soil. The land across the sea was alien territory. The people there were different. Their lifestyle, their way of life, and their customs were unfamiliar. And they could even be hostile. They did not follow the laws of God. On top of that, the shoreline on the other side was covered with caves where the dead were buried. The tombs were said to be occupied by demons. It was a scary place over there. On their way over, a violent storm developed, and it tossed the boat with gale force winds. Squalls were common in that area, but in this case, water was coming into the vessel. It terrified even the seasoned fishermen on board. The storm seemed to have the power to sink the boat and to drown everyone who was on the ship. While the disciples are struggling against the storm, Jesus is sleeping peacefully in the back of the boat, untroubled by the wind and the waves. So his disciples cry out to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" They could not understand why Jesus wasn't doing anything, why he didn't get up to help them, why he wasn't performing some miracle, making it all okay like he always had. That can happen in our own lives when storms come in, right? We wonder, "Where are you, God? How could you abandon me in my hour of greatest need? Why do you not care about me? Why don't you seem to care about me? But we can manage those fears by remembering who controls the hedge of protection around us. God gave it to us. He can remove it for a while. He can also put it back. And that's what happened in the story. When the disciples cried out to Jesus, he woke up. He spoke to the sea, the winds ceased, and there was a great calm. The disciples learned a valuable lesson that day about whom to trust. I learned a similar lesson a few years ago, kind of a different context, maybe a funny story, at least I think it is. A good friend of mine is a successful investor. He's made a lot of money on Wall Street. And as a favor to his family members and his closest friends, he offers to invest their money in the market and even guarantee the investment against a loss. For his family and friends, it's the best of both worlds. If the stock price goes up, they get the profit. If the stock price goes down and they lose money, my friend pays them back personally. He does it out of the goodness of his heart. He invited me to participate, and of course, I jumped at the chance. There was a huge potential upside, no downside whatsoever. So I gave my friend half of my life's savings, which, let's be clear, is not very much. But it was half of my life savings. It was a lot to me. He took that money and he traded it on the market for a single stock. A single stock. He didn't diversify. He bought one stock with all of that. He said to me, "Father Roger, give it 5 years and do not check the stock price except maybe once a year." Of course, I ignored that advice. I checked the stock price every single day, several times a day. And within a few weeks of purchasing the stock, the price had plummeted to less than half of what I had paid for it. I called my friend up. I said, "Hey, are you sure about this? This doesn't seem right. Something's wrong. Should I get out now while I can? You know, I'd still have half of my life savings left." He said, "Father Roger, don't worry, calm down, everything's fine, this is normal for the market, there's always fluctuations, it's a volatile time right now. Just be patient and have faith and stop checking the stock price." Well, I continued to check it every single day, and after a few weeks, you know, every few weeks, I would text him. I would say, "Hey buddy, like, it's still like rock bottom. Nothing's happening. It's not budging. Like, it's not coming up. What should we do?" Finally, after pestering him over and over again, he called me and he explained things to me. He said, and I have to be careful because I have two math majors, an econ major right here on the front row, just graduated from the University of Notre Dame, so they understand all this stuff. But here's what my friend said to me. He said, "Father Roger, the price of a stock reflects the short-term perceptions of people. It's not reality. It doesn't necessarily reflect how solid, stable, successful, or stable a company really is." And then he said this, "What really matters is who is in the C-suite." The C-suite is a business term for the chief executive officer and the senior managing officer. Officials, the people that run the company. And he said, "What matters is who's in the C-suite. If they're well-trained, if they know what they're doing, if they're doing the right thing, the company will be on good ground. It will grow and it will be successful. And eventually, it will take time, but eventually the stock price will increase to reflect that reality." What he was saying to me is that you should trust whoever is in the C-suite of a good company. Well, I got off the phone feeling better, but I gotta tell you, over the next 2 years, it was a long, scary ride. Finally, 2 years later, the stock price came up to the break-even point for me. I called him at 6:15 in the morning before the markets open. I said, "Sell it now, sell all of it, get me out of this, get rid of all the stock, don't delay." He said, "Father Roger, I don't really agree. We agreed on 5 years, but okay for you. Subtext, I'm sick of you. annoying me with all this, I'll do it. So he sold everything. I made $300 on the transaction. I kept monitoring the stock price, and I hate to admit this, and I'm not exaggerating, literally 2 weeks later, the price soared through the roof. I missed out on a huge opportunity to make a lot of money, and I learned a valuable lesson about trusting who is in the C-suite. Here's the principle. God is the one running the company of your life. He's in the C-suite. Nothing can happen to you unless He allows it to happen. When things get rough and the stormy weather comes, you'll feel like your stock price is falling fast. People will tell you to sell that stock, get out while you can, jump ship, change course, give up on your dreams, abandon your destiny, admit defeat right now. Don't invest that money in that small business you've always wanted to start. You might lose your life savings. Don't take that advanced honors class. You might jeopardize your GPA. Don't chance getting hurt by yet another relationship. Get out now. When you see the storm coming, turn around, go back to the shore. Get out while you can. People will tell you that. But can I tell you? Jesus and the other disciples got to the other side safely. The raging elements and the howling winds did not harm them. It was a test. It was a test. The more the disciples learned to trust the one in the C-suite, the stronger they would become. The more they came to understand who really controls the wind and the waves, the more confident and better prepared they would be to deal with the people on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and later on to achieve their destiny through all the hardships they would face. Same was true for Job. God put Job to the test. Through his whole ordeal, Job was patient. He didn't curse God like all his friends told him to do. He didn't sin at all. I mean, he didn't understand it. He didn't like it. He complained to God about it, but he did not say anything disrespectful to God. He trusted the one in the C-suite. And in the end, God restored the hedge of protection around him and blessed him with even greater prosperity. He gave him double for his trouble, twice what he had before. Last October, I was at a conference in Orlando, Florida. My brother lives nearby, so I decided to pay him a visit. I got on the internet and I reserved a rental car for the next day. I reserved it at a company that had a small office in the hotel across the street from the conference center. Next morning, I walked over to claim my vehicle, and I'm in line, and there's only one person ahead of me. It's the father of a family. It's the dad, the mom, and the two small children there. And as I walk up, he's in the process of shouting at the lady behind the counter. Now, normally, I do love to eavesdrop. It's a personal pastime of mine. I'm kidding. But at this point, you could not mistake what was going on. Apparently, I pieced it together, and what was happening was that he had gotten some bad information from someone outside the company who told him to just show up. There would be plenty of cars. He didn't need a reservation. And that's what he did. But when he got there, there were no cars. They were all rented by other customers or reserved for people like me. Well, he was furious. He was angry and he was upset. It wasn't the woman's fault. It wasn't even the company's fault. But he kept getting angrier and angrier. The woman politely explained to him, you know, the situation. She said she was sorry, even though she wasn't at fault or the company. She sympathized with his plight. She empathized with the situation of the family. In my view, she was very loving to the man, but he kept becoming more and more irate. At one point, he slammed his fist down on the counter and he said, "This is unacceptable. We have to get to Disney World." Now, you know me, I understand the urgency of getting to Disney World, but this man scared the living daylights out of this woman. I mean, she jumped when he slammed his fist down. And she was clearly frightened and intimidated and scared. She was kind of shaking like a leaf. And I knew that I should probably step in, you know, maybe offer my rental car or, you know, just say a loving word to the man to try to calm him down. But to be honest, I was scared too. Well, after a few minutes of this, a man slowly rose from behind a panel in the very back of the office. You couldn't see him before. And this man was enormous. He was 6'5", not exaggerating, 280 pounds of pure steel. He came around from behind the screen and he gently walked up to the man. He said, "Sir, I'm the manager here. I'm the man in charge. I understand that you're upset." He was very kind and gentle. He explained the situation again. "There just aren't any cars." Well, the man calmed down, as you can imagine, immediately after seeing the size of this man. He wasn't happy, but he went away peacefully. The storm was over. Well, I got my car and I went back. I was driving to my brother's house and I started thinking on the way. Why did the manager, the man in charge, why did he wait so long before he came to the aid of his staffer? Why did he wait so long before he came to her rescue, let her be afraid and intimidated and frightened? You could ask the same question about Jesus. Why did he fall asleep in the back of the boat when he knew his disciples were going to be terrified? Job suffered for months, some scholars say years. Why did it take so long for God to restore the hedge of protection around him? These are good questions. Sometimes God allows us to weather the storm on our own for a while. He removes that hedge of protection for a time to test our resolve and to make us stronger. When things are going wrong in your life, when the storms are raging, when you're scared of the future, you're not sure what's going to happen, you're not sure what to do, you're wondering where God is, and you feel like that hedge of protection has not only been removed but completely trampled down, remember to trust the one who is in the C-suite, the man in charge. He is bigger than any opposition you face. He is stronger than any problem that could ever come your way. He's not sitting back behind some panel, relaxing, indifferent to your concerns. He's not in the back of the boat, sleeping, not caring about what you're going through. No, God sees you, and he sees when you're going through a struggle like that. He knows that you're not sure you're going to make it to the other side. He's concerned about you, and he loves you. But sometimes God waits to help you grow in confidence. And sometimes he holds back to allow you to learn to trust in him and his loving plan to get you through that storm. But in the meantime, while it's happening, he will give you supernatural grace to get through it. He will give you a spirit of endurance and plant it deep in your soul so you can handle the problem in front of you. God will never allow you to become so or feel so overwhelmed that you're not able to fulfill your purpose for him. And at the right time, when you need him the most, the man in charge will slowly rise from behind the panel, enormous and huge, capable of conquering any problem you have. He will step around that panel. He will take care and deal with that enemy. He will rebuke the winds. He will calm your fearful thoughts. He will get you safely to the other side of the sea. And he will restore that hedge of protection around you. So here's my question for you today. Who is in your C-suite? Is it fear, worry, intimidation, anxiety, lack, can't do it, not enough, not sure, scared of the future? Or is it the one the first reading says has the power to shut within doors the sea, has the power to set limits on the raging waters, has the power to still the proud waves? Fear not. God is in your C-suite. He is your man in charge.